From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. This fall marks the 25th anniversary of a seminal moment in the history of California, the battle over Proposition 187, an anti-immigrant ballot measure that divided the nation's most populous and increasingly diverse state. It set the stage for the models of political activism for both pro- and anti-immigrant groups for decades to come. And for my guest, it was a transformational moment. Writing in a series of articles for the Los Angeles Times, Gustavo Arellano has attempted to capture the political upheaval of 1994. He wrote, quote, Proposition 187 split the psyche of the state like few things before or since. Gustavo writes for the LA Times. He previously worked at the OC Weekly, where he was an investigative reporter for 15 years and the paper's editor for 6. And at the paper, he also wrote a column called Ask a Mexican, which catapulted him to national fame. His numerous books include Taco USA, How Mexican Food Conquered America. Welcome to the program, Gustavo.
Hola, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. So I remember that time. It was my first time in California. I was just here as a summer student and then left and came back a few years later. And I happened to capture a glimpse of one massive march through the streets of downtown LA. But that whole campaign to promote 187 and to combat it was many months long. What were you doing at that time? What was the role that you played?
I was just a sophomore in high school, basically clueless about 187 and all the anger and controversy around it until October of 94. So this is just even less than a month before the election. I'm a sophomore at Anaheim High School, and I'm walking home, and out of nowhere, some white boys in a truck start yelling at me, 187, 187. And I was clueless. I had no idea what they were talking about. I'm like, oh, maybe they're just pranking me or whatever. Then I get home and I find out what 187 was, this anti-immigrant xenophobic campaign surrounding it. And I thought to myself, and I'm like, those people don't even know if I'm undocumented or not. They have no idea, but they see that I'm brown, so they try to intimidate me.
So what exactly was Proposition 187 in terms of what it asked voters to choose? And what role did Governor Pete Wilson, then governor of California, Republican governor, play?
187 on its face sought to deny public benefits to undocumented workers. Specifically, it would deny them public education from K all the way through college. It would deny them any welfare, any medical benefits except emergency care. It would also make any government worker essentially an INS agent and say if they suspected anyone of being in this country without papers, they had to report them to the INS. So it mentioned nothing about race, as its proponents would say. They just said, we want to target the people who are not supposed to be here. But the controversy surrounding it, or the rhetoric around it, was completely xenophobic. People have to realize that California 25 years ago was experiencing immigration from Latin America and Asia that the state had never experienced in such numbers. So a lot of the long timers, let's admit, a lot of the older white folks, they didn't like it. So in the years before, there were campaigns to outlaw any signs for businesses that were in a foreign language. There was a successful campaign in 1986 to make English the official language of California just for the hell of it. And all around this was the governor of California, Pete Wilson, a former senator, longtime mayor of San Diego. And he jumped, actually, the narrative is that he jumped on the issue of illegal immigration right in 1994. But really, he had been campaigning against it almost from the moment he entered the governor's seat in Sacramento in 1990.
Now, you referenced the INS. That's an agency that no longer exists. It was the Immigration and Naturalization Services. Now, of course, it's all under the oversight of the Department of Homeland Security. So today we talk about things like Border Patrol, and we talk about ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. But that rhetoric, this idea of denying immigrants public services, is one that persists through to today. So let's talk about the ripple effect that Proposition 187 had in anti-immigrant crowds all across the United States, and in many ways has paved the way for Trump's presidency being based on anti-immigrant sentiment, right?
Yeah, so the popular note, when people mention 187, they use that as a cautionary tale, saying if you do stuff like 187, you're going to wake up and, or you're going to create a generation of Latino progressives that are then going to take over whatever municipality they may be in and reject the GOP. That's exactly what happened in California. California now is super deep blue, progressive state, Democrats control the state legislature by supermajorities. What's less told, though, is how 187 also inspired anti-immigrant activists to replicate 187. And behind that really was the Federation for American Immigration Reform, a hate group as labeled by the Southern Poverty Law Center, who's the two authors of 187, Alan Nelson and Harold Azell. They're both former INS agents. Nelson was an employee, a lobbyist for FAIR, and Azell was a member of FAIR. So,
and FAIR was the Federation of American Immigration, I can't remember the exact title, but it's basically an anti-immigrant group.
Federation for American Immigration Reform. And so FAIR, I interviewed Dan Stein, who's a longtime president of FAIR, and he told me how the group saw 187 from afar, donated ultimately $300,000 in campaign ads to try to pass it, then saw with dismay as it fell, as it got eventually ruled unconstitutional by a federal judge. But from there, they realized, okay, this is what 187 campaign, the 187 campaign did right. This is what they did wrong. We're now going to replicate it. So they then went and replicated it. SB 1070 in Arizona, the Show Me Your Papers laws from 2010. So
the Sensenbrenner bill, as it was called.
Yeah. Exactly. The Sensenbrenner bill from the mid-2000s. Local initiatives in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, all across the United States. And all along the way, they funded groups, like citizens groups that would campaign for these. They would provide lawyers that would try to make sure that that the new laws would not be found unconstitutional like 187 was. And it created this pipeline of activists that eventually, a lot of them now are in the Trump White House. So 187 birthed super progressive Latinos. 187 also birthed the anti-immigration movement as we know it today.
Those super progressive Latinos, among them, you interviewed some folks who actually took their work and their mission so seriously, they went on to actually enter higher office. Among them, Kevin De Leon, former president pro tem of the California Senate. Tell me about some of these folks, some of whom you interviewed for your series in the Los Angeles Times about 187.
It's amazing to see sort of the alumni of the 187 fights, fighting against 187. At that march that you remember, that was October 16th from East LA to LA City Hall, attended by over 70,000 people. Two of the main organizers were Kevin De Leon, as you mentioned, former Senate pro tem, president of the California State Senate, and also Fabian Nunez, who was a state assembly speaker. You also had there Antonio Villaraigosa, the mayor of Los Angeles. All they were involved in organizing it. There at the rally, Alex Padilla, the current California Secretary of State, Maria Elena Durazo, legendary labor activist who's now a California state senator. You had so many people, and those are just the prominent names. And even the people who did not attend, you had principals, you had city council members, school board trustees, just regular folks. And one story that didn't get into my LA Times series, there was a guy who owns a body shop in Sun Valley, a suburb of Los Angeles. And he said, look, that radicalized me. That made me think, okay, I am a Mexican American. I'm the child of Mexican immigrants. A lot of Californians think we're trash. So I'm going to be a small business person. I'm going to show them what, a child of undocumented immigrants can do. It radicalized a generation of Latinos, Generation X, basically my age, a little bit higher and a little bit younger and a little bit older.
You are the child of immigrants too, and you said you were a high school student at that time. How did high school and college age kids become active? What were the campaigns that helped to educate them? Because of course, political organizing is often, it often goes unmentioned, but it's the hard work of educating people that helps mobilize folks. It doesn't just happen magically when people read the paper about 187. Reading a dry article about what 187 did, I imagine, wasn't as effective as the political mobilizing and organizing that went on in the streets, right?
What's interesting is that there was a two-pronged approach. There was the official No on 187 campaign called Taxpayers Against 187, and they were just completely ineffective. Their main point was illegal immigration is wrong, but 187 doesn't solve it, which, of course, for youth or progressives, there's like, that's no response. So then you had the grassroots campaign. In July, there was a big conference at Fresno State in the Central Valley of California. Over 200 high schoolers and college students went, and they got together and talked amongst themselves. What can we do to mobilize this issue? And the fruits of that happened in October and November, when tens of thousands of high schoolers and college students across California staged walkouts, staged marches, staged sit-ins, teach-ins, and all of that. And maybe that wasn't the most effective thing. They got a lot of bad press out of it because a lot of the folks were waving the Mexican flag. But what I would argue now is that it was those youth that ended up turning California into the progressive powerhouse that it is today. It wasn't the official Democrats in office or the No on 187 campaign that planted the seeds that ended up into the California of today. It was those people who walked out. It was those high schoolers and those college students.
So Proposition 187 went on to actually pass at the ballot in spite of the massive organizing against it. And as you mentioned earlier, it was in the courts that it eventually lost. It sort of reminds me of the fight that came many years later around Proposition 8, the same-sex marriage ban that passed, albeit much more narrowly passed than Prop 187, only to then fail in the courts. So did that give also, especially young Latinos in California, greater inspiration to do basic things like voter registration and organizing people to go out and vote?
187 passed by a landslide, 59-41%. You tell that to people in California, now they can't believe it. But that was a different state back then. And yeah, in the 1996 election, you already start seeing more Latinos not just registering to vote, but becoming American citizens. I could talk about my parents. My dad came to this country in the trunk of a Chevy. My mom came here legally because my grandmother was born in the United States as a refugee from the Mexican Revolution. They weren't citizens when 187 happened in 1994. By 1996, my mom became a citizen. She voted. By 1998, my dad became a citizen. He voted, and they voted in every election ever since. And look, my the people that I grew up with, we come from small villages in Mexico. We're mostly conservative. At most, I would say they're my cousins and whatnot are libertarian. They don't really like the Democrats. They think they go too much to the left, but they're always going to vote Democrat because they remember what Pete Wilson and the Republican Party said about our family in 1994, namely that we are destroying California and that we shouldn't even be here. So forever, we will not vote, at least my cousins will not vote Republican. And that's it. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Latinos feel that way.
Now, today we have a Republican Party that is grappling with, let's just say kindly, diversity. The party is becoming increasingly whiter, and a big part of that has to do with this anti-immigrant rhetoric. Communities of color largely vote Democratic. You see waves last in 2000, November 2018 at the federal level, we saw waves of young people of color, especially young women of color, many of them with immigrant backgrounds, becoming members of Congress for the very first time. And it seems as though a little bit of what happened in California around 187 offered a sort of microcosm of what then has played out in just the last few years and may still be, of course, unfolding nationally with a figure like Trump riling up the anti-immigrant hysteria and that actually spurring progressive young people of color to seek higher office.
If anything, California, as California goes, the rest of the country goes. So what played out 25 years ago with Prop 187 is playing out now with Trump in the White House. And he's re-energizing Latino activists. He's inspiring a new generation of Latinos who maybe got a little bit complacent under Obama, thinking, we have DACA now. Eventually they're going to give us amnesty or you're not going to have this anti-immigrant rhetoric of the past. No, Trump has mobilized that base. Trump has unwittingly mobilized that base. And that's the predictions that Trump is creating an ethno party, focused mostly on white and working class white folks. But that's the exact same and middle class white folks, voters. That's exactly what Pete Wilson and the Republicans did with 187 25 years ago. And look how it worked out. I can guarantee you this, that the new generation of Latinos, they are remembering what Pete Wilson is saying about them, about their family members, about their friends, about how we're rapists and drug dealers, and some of us, I guess, are good people. That, remember, that was his very first speech that he gave. And he makes the rhetoric of 1994 seem like a plea for amnesty. And Latinos, you know, a lot of them have voted. I mean, you're seeing this in Arizona. Arizona used to be deep red. Now it's somewhat purple because of Joe Arpaio, the notorious sheriff of Maricopa County. You're going to see this happen more and more in the coming years, if not decades.
In Texas, people are very much seeing, again, this is a border state, a traditionally red state that many are predicting is turning blue pretty significantly. And I'm wondering if the similar sorts of dynamics around immigration have played out there.
Oh, the same thing is happening anywhere. And again, what I tell my friends in the Republican Party, especially those in California, at that point, I tell them, like, look, you have an obligation. If you really care about your party, you have an obligation to tell your fellow GOPers across the rest of the country and saying, look, here in California, we are effectively dead. And we're trying to rebuild slowly but surely, but we can't with Trump, with Trump's rhetoric. And if you don't want to be like us, then don't be like us. Do not support someone who has such blatantly xenophobic policies, and do not use, at the very least, the rhetoric that he uses. It didn't work out for us in California. We're like the ghost of Christmas future, basically.
As you and I are speaking, the Supreme Court is getting ready to hear arguments in the case around DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program that deferred deportation for a few hundred thousand undocumented kids, not kids, I should say youth, young folks. They might have been kids when Obama first enacted it. Many of them are now in their mid-20s. And that program is very much in jeopardy. The Supreme Court may be coming down with a pretty severe ruling, or maybe not. We'll have to see how that plays out. But we're also at a time when presidential candidates who are vying for votes are coming out with plans on immigration. Bernie Sanders just released his very forward-thinking, it seems, plan on immigration. And many others are taking that seriously in the Democratic Party as well. And I'm wondering if you think that this fight around immigration has pushed Democrats, many of whom had kind of been taking the votes of people of color and immigrant background folks for granted, pushed them to address immigration like never before.
Absolutely, because they see the future. They see the demography of the United States. They see the Latinos are the largest ethnic group in the United States now. And from 187, you have this whole activist class of Democrats that will say, look, we need comprehensive immigration reform. We can't have piecemeal legislation. We need it for everyone. We also can't have policies the way Obama, the deporter in chief, had under his administration. What's amazing is that 25 years ago, a lot of Democrats were talking tough on illegal immigration. Part of my podcast for the LA Times talked about how Dianne Feinstein, who's now lionized for talking against putting children in cages, in 1994, she was talking about being tough on illegal immigration. Mm. And she didn't even oppose 187 until 3 weeks before the election. And even then, she cast herself as a martyr for doing that, saying, it's probably going to cost me the election. You had Latinos from East Los Angeles passing legislation in the California legislature banning undocumented immigrants from getting driver's licenses. That you would never see that nowadays today at all. No, instead you have, you know, people like Julian Castro and Bernie Sanders saying abolish ICE, decriminalize illegal immigration. That's extraordinary, and that also is you know, part of the legacy of 187.
And we'll link, by the way, to your podcast. This is California, the Battle of 187. Gustavo, you reported from the event that took place recently to mark the 25 years after the 25th anniversary of 187. It was called We Are California, 25 Years Beyond 187. You described it as a civic engagement Coachella festival. Tell me a little bit about that and some of the folks you talked to, some of the veterans of that struggle against 187.
It was a really cool event, part homecoming, but yeah, part rally for not just remembering and exulting in the nostalgia of 187, both the good and the bad, but also saying, look, 2020 is going to be a very important election. So there, it was at LA State Historic Park, so near Chinatown, you had people registering voters, helping people become U.S. citizens, trying to get signatures to put various propositions on the ballot or for various candidates. markets. And, you know, there was music, there was food trucks. But for me, the best part was seeing like three generation of Latino politicians, the old school folks, the Gloria Molinas and Richard Polancos, who were in office. 187 happened. The next generation, the Kevin De Leons and Antonio Villaraigosas, who were the activists. But then you had people like Wendy Carrillo. Wendy Carrillo is a state assemblywoman from the Los Angeles area. She was a high schooler, a Salvadoran immigrant who came here without papers, who marched out in 187, and now she's at the state capitol. So just seeing all these people, just proud of what they did, yes, but more importantly, knowing that the battle is far from over, and being ready to tell the rest of the United States, hey, what you're going through right now, we found a way out of it. We found better days. And if you want to know how we did it, come talk to us. We're here in California, ready to share our wisdom.
Gustavo, we will link to your pieces in the LA Times as well as your podcast on 187. Thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time.
Gracias, Sonali.
My guest has been Gustavo Arellano. He's a writer for the Los Angeles Times. Before that, he was at the OC Weekly, where he was an investigative reporter for 15 years, and also that paper's editor for six of those 15 years. At the paper, he also wrote a column called Ask a Mexican. He's written a number of books, including Taco USA, How Mexican Food Conquered America. We've been discussing the 25th anniversary of the fight over Proposition 187 in California. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.